Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Welcome to the Andor Podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to a galaxy far, far away. I'm David.
I'm John.
And this is our podcast for the Star Wars Disney Plus show Andor, Season 1, Episode 7, Announcement.
In this episode, we'll be discussing our overall thoughts on the episode before moving into a scene-by-scene breakdown.
Before we get started, a quick reminder that you can send feedback to andor@thelorehounds.com, and we'll get to those questions on the next episode. And if you want to keep talking Star Wars with us, join us on the Bald Move Discord server, link in the description below, and at baldmove.com.
Don't forget to subscribe to our feed to get all our content about Andor, The Rings of Power, The White Lotus, and other upcoming shows. And please, if you have a moment, rate and review our podcast to help other people find it.
This season of Andor, we're covering the future episodes by major story arc. You can expect our coverage of episodes 8 through 10 after episode 10 airs. Now, let's get into our overall thoughts on this episode. John, what did you think of episode 7 announcement?
It was good. I was worried going in that after 2 epic arcs where we had basically a movie each, it would be hard to match that level of excitement.
Yeah.
And hard to match that rise and fall that we've been trained to expect from Andor so far.
Right.
But I will say that I was glued to my TV the whole time in a different way.
Uh-huh.
I think that we got to see behind the curtain of what's happening with Luthen, with Mon Mothma, with Vel even, and see what's going on behind the scenes. And that was really cool to see, and I think we needed this episode to bridge the gap between these big moments.
Big
because you
right.
look at Rings of Power.
Yeah.
We've been talking about that a lot, so it's on the mind.
We've looked at it a lot.
And my issue with Rings of Power, my biggest issue storytelling-wise, was they're not giving me enough moments. They're not letting me see into these characters' heads.
Right.
And to this episode, I saw into Mon Mothma's head.
Uh-huh.
And that was really great to see.
Right.
What did you think, David?
I was on the edge of my seat this entire episode. I didn't know what to expect. When I read some news and we saw one of our one of the friends of ours on Discord in the channel noted that the 7 was going to be this standalone before the next 2 arcs, I'd been sort of crafting in my head, well, what could they do? Could they do some sort of action sequence? How are they going to bridge? Is this going to be like a bottle episode thing? And we talk a lot about table setting or place setting episodes in some of these big prestige shows, these big title shows. And this is a place setting show or episode, but it was so expertly done and they contained the place setting so well. Like, so we don't have, it's like 2 place setter episodes back to back and now we're going to get the penultimate and, see. No, they made this one episode, the entire place setter, and yet they had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. And I was bowled over several times at some of the dialogue and the intimate character moments that we had. So I loved this episode. I thought it was just fabulous.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. So I'm excited to get into it. What do you say we start this scene by scene breakdown?
Sounds great. Do you want to start with a scene reading and we'll trade off, I guess?
Sure. Sure. Okay. That sounds good.
Cool.
All right. So first off, we have Karn and his mother sitting in her apartment and arguing over his approach to his upcoming interview with the Bureau of Standards that Uncle Harlow got for him. Karn also sees a TV report of the Aldani attack.
So before we talk about Karn and his mother and some other things, the opening shot of this sequence was gorgeous. That blue light that was coming in through his window, and we see his room, this sort of bare cubicle with these three action figures on the shelf. But the just from a visual standpoint, the blue light and the way that they rim lighted him with that was just gorgeous. And it set the tone and it set the mood for what this character is dealing with.
It's kind of a depressing arc with Karn this episode. And you see sort of the direction he's going in and how he's thinking to himself, do I go with the flow? Do I fall into the banality of evil? Or do I go and be sort of an evil superhero? And I think that he's biding his time for now, but I don't think this is the last we're going to see of Karn.
Not at all. And there's a great little moment where his mother points out his suit, his brown suit, has been altered in some way. She's like, what did you do to it? And then they get into the collar thing, and he's like, oh, I had it tailored. Well, that's what he said to his commander back for Prolox when he was a corp. And he had his uniform tailored there. Now, this is going to quickly jump us to a next scene, but they talk about his collar, and then they jump to Deirdre and her uniform, and then there's a close-up tight shot of her collar in the next scene.
Yeah, you know, first of all, yeah, I totally love that callback to the first episode with the collar. With the tailoring.
Yeah, and tailoring.
His mom's kind of right, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think his mom realizes that she's the reason why he needs that attention.
Of course not. She's his mother. Everything's right, according to her.
Yeah, no, that she's totally the reason he has this level of insecurity. But you know what? My guy likes to look good. So kudos to him. And so does Deirdre.
Yes.
Because Deirdre is getting herself together while we listen to... why don't you tell us?
Let's see. Deirdre goes through her routine while audio plays of Yularen's address to the ISB about Aldani and the Empire's response, which includes a heavy tax on anyone harboring partisan groups, a threat of an end to tolerance for religious and cultural groups, and a new ISB access to military resources, aka the, well, let's see, let's not get too real.
In the Star Wars universe, we're looking at Star Destroyers. Thankfully, we don't have those in the real world.
That's right.
and you see that later in the episode already. You have Star Destroyers, you have droids, you have a level of militarization that you have not seen on planetside in a long time.
What did you think of this more senior ISB commander giving them their marching orders?
Yeah, no, I liked it. I thought that it was a great way to sort of say, you guys are the real heroes. It's a big Homelander energy. And they're saying, you know, you're going to have all the military resources you need. You're going to have Star Destroyers everywhere. You're going to have droids everywhere. You're going to be able to beat people up whenever you want. And it was sort of a great tone-setting moment for the rest of the episode, because we see how that's affecting ordinary people as the episode goes on. What about you, David?
Yeah, the banality of evil raises its head again here. It's such technocratic speak. I even wrote down the acronym, but I didn't get all of the words, but it was like P-O-R-D, I think, something.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, isn't that just so bureaucratic to come up with a acronym for, you know, this policy, this process? And it was so coldly delivered and so calculated, and it had so much historical relevance. The whole thing about, we were talking about Hannah Arendt the other day, and the dictator's dilemma is one of these things where, you know, dictatorships have a problem with information flow because everything gets siloed. And it even goes back to Tolkien, evil cannot trust itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this problem where a problem for dictatorships is they become blind. and they can't see.
No, I'm having a lot of trouble managing my dictatorship. I don't know about you.
Huge, huge problems. And later on, we even see that arises in a later scene. But yeah, this is a great setup for what's going on with the ISB.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I really enjoy especially the way that they organize this episode generally, because it is tough to do a standalone episode in a series where you've trained the audience to expect sagas.
Yeah.
And I really like how they sort of evolved the idea of increasing security, of Patriot acting, the Star Wars universe, etc. That was awesome.
Yeah. So, and I really loved the ending scene there where Deidre's having sort of this moment of crisis where she's like, oh, we're playing right into the rebels' hands.
Right.
And her assistant says, well, what would you call it? She says, an announcement. So she titles an episode for us. And then we cut right to Luthen listening to the radio. And I love that little connection. Like, where do we listen for announcements? Well, on the radio. Right. It was, right. It's a brilliant little piece of television making.
And Deidre's scene is surrounded by two versions of people listening to the attack. You have Karn on the front end and then Luthen on the back end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's good pickup. Yeah, totally. And there she is in the middle of it, dealing with the fallout from it. Well, that opens up the next scene then. We've got Luthen listens to a news report about the attack before an unexpected visit from Mon Mothma. Luthen denies his involvement with the Aldani attack, but eventually relents. Mon Mothma alludes to a meeting that night. Luthen says it's time to force the Empire to be drastic. What did you think of this scene, John?
Oh, it was excellent. I love that, you know, we talk about evil can't trust itself, but the Rebellion kind of can't trust itself.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, nobody can actually speak their mind to each other.
Yeah. And I clocked that when Luthen at first said, you know, he was kind of laughing it off. No, of course I wouldn't do something like that. I'm like, wait a minute, why are you lying to her? I thought you guys were in cahoots. And later, I think even Luthen's assistant says, well, I hope she's worth it. And it's like, oh, so they're playing Mon Mothma even.
And Mon Mothma is playing Tay later.
Yes. And she plays Tay like Luthen played her.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you exactly who I am or what I want to do, but I will tell you that it might be worth your while.
The acting that Stellan Skarsgård is laying out in this is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous. When he hands her the weapon and says, you know, what's the line? Has anyone ever made a weapon that hasn't been used? And it's like, whoa, like the double speak there just floored me. It was like, he's talking about this thing. I mean, he's play acting for the driver at the same time as he's delivering a message to Mon Mothma that this is how my little sector of the rebellion, how I'm going to drive things. This is the tone. This is the way we're going. We're building a weapon and we're going to use it.
Stellan Skarsgård just generally is presenting a masterclass here. I mean, the way he moves in and out of the jovial,
oh my gosh,
antique shop runner is, and this very serious rebellion leader is just incredible. I mean, he sells both so well,
yeah.
And the transition is like that.
Yeah, yeah, completely. It's a thing to behold. It's gorgeous. What do you think about the fast revolution versus slow revolution? Who is our political philosopher on Aldani? I'm blanking his name again.
Oh, Nemec, yeah.
Nemec. So Nemec, if we remember, was talking about, well, you know, isn't it crazy? Like the Empire is like, you know, we're flooded with all these different little atrocities and we're kind of blind to it and they're sort of slowly choking us. And what has Luthen done? He's forced the Empire's hand to come down more drastically so that people really see and feel the boot that's on their neck.
Well, I mean, that's a real debate in the real world. And when you are looking at a totalitarian regime that is just doing little enough evil, little enough aggressive evil to spark a resistance, how do you get the people to resist when they're kind of comfortable, lulled into this sleep? They're choking us and we're not even noticing it anymore.
And I think we see Luthen's fervor here and his ruthlessness. And when Mon Mothma is like, you know, people will suffer. And he's like, that's the plan. It's like, whoa, this dude is ice cold and, you know, ice water running through his veins.
But I think, you know, there's a case for both sides because, yes, people will suffer. More people will suffer in the short term because of Luthen's plan. But arguably, fewer people will suffer in the decades to come with Luthen's plan. So it really is an ethical dilemma, and it's delightful to watch on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just hope we don't face too many of those real-world situations ourselves.
Right.
Back to Stellan Skarsgård here really quick, too. I don't know if you tracked this, but when Mon Mothma was flying away and they had a close-up of his face, his face and eyes tracked up as if he were watching her ship fly away. And I was like, wow. Like, I don't know if they had a little green ball and a stick that somebody, you know, did that. But, like, he just sold every inch of that scene in his body, his mannerisms, his voice, the look in his eye. Amazing.
Let's have him on the podcast.
Man, that would be amazing. That would be a great get.
How would you like them apples?
I would like them apples a lot.
Next up, we have Karn at the Bureau of Standards doing an interview and having a tour. He's sort of hinted at that he should explain why he left his previous employer, and he gives a very, very incriminating response about how there's a criminal on the loose, and he tried to get him, and people died, and I'm here to clear my name, and the guy's just like, okay, maybe we should just remove some of that from your resume. And he offers him a job in fuel purity.
I was like, wait, what are you talking about? Why just zip your lip? Just go to your pod and sit down. Like,
you know, we've used the term venting spleens on this podcast before. That was a spleen venting if I've ever seen one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, like, you know, he's, like I said, I think he's got PTSD and he's still processing. And so, like, anybody comes near him, he's just going to, like, vomit out. You know, he's just going to vent his spleen all over them.
And this interviewer is like, sir, we have cubicles here.
Here's yours. How did you watch Severance?
I did.
How many on a scale of 1 to 10, what was your Severance vibe for this scene?
Oh, Severance vibe for this scene. I was going to say I love Severance, but Severance vibe for the scene, pretty close, except I guess he'll still remember that his mom hates him while he's at work.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Just the cubicle-ness of it all really just gave me those kinds of feels.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we jump to a hooded woman walking through various areas of Corsicant following some markings. Good spycraft there. And, this is a little montage scene. And then we've got Deirdre gets called Sir when she goes in to ask for some reports. So it's a great little comical moment here. And then we have Cinta pulling the cover off a really janky speeder as a Star Destroyer flies over her on Aldani.
Good montage. Not a lot happened, of course, but we get some minor developments that set up the next scenes.
Yeah, I loved the way that this show is playing comedy. So, like, we've got, obviously, House of the Dragon is very dark right now, and it's excellent, but it's dark, and there's not a lot of humor in it to be found.
Come on, man, we got feet everywhere.
Oh, no. So, this show, arguably, is just as dark in many ways, yet we're getting nice little sprinklings of humor here, and this scene of this what was his name, attendant somebody sleeping on the job and then sort of being given this double super secret, you know, records request thing was just pure comic genius. And I just love the fact that the showrunner and the writers can give us these little moments of levity. Even though here we are, the Internal Security Bureau of the Empire, my God, and yet they can find this little moment of humor to keep our spirits up as we're watching this.
Yeah, no, the humor in the show is perfect. It's not too much. It's not too little.
Yeah. Great shot of that Star Destroyer flying. I mean, could you imagine something like that overhead? Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Crazy. So the hooded woman then.
Yes.
We learn that the hooded woman is Luthen's assistant, Clea.
Yep.
Who then meets with Vel, and they discuss the losses of the team. Then Clay orders Vel to find and take care of Cassian. What's going on with this, David?
So at first when they showed her getting off that public transit thing and walking through, I was like, oh, cool, new character. Who's this? You know, I'm going to have to like make my notes and stuff.
She had big young Carrie Fisher vibes.
Oh, did she? I was going to add, that's right in my notes here. She codes like Leia, exclamation point.
Yeah.
Yep. When we first had, when she's first talking to Kel, I was like, God, that looks like Leia. And I don't know, I wonder if that's intentional or not.
I, for a second, I thought it was a deep fake like they did in Rogue One, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I don't know if they're playing with something here. They're playing with us a little bit, you know, emotionally to contrast again more. This isn't your father's Star Wars.
Yeah. This is a very interesting shot. This is a very morally gray thing that Kleya orders Vel to do, and is not really something that you expect in Star Wars. I think, you know, I think of The Last Jedi, and I don't want to go too deep into the debacle that people were complaining about with that, but one of the things that made me like The Last Jedi was I felt that was the first main Star Wars movie where we got some pushback on the Jedi being good,
yeah,
on being purely good. And I want to see more of that in Star Wars. I want to see people make tough, morally gray choices for things that they think are right. And I want to see good people falter because they are human beings and they make mistakes. And this is one where you say, I get why Clay is ordering this, but boy, is this icky.
The other thing that I'm curious about is why didn't Vel return the Sky Crystal? I mean, Cassian was very clear, like, give this back to your man. And Luthen was very clear, I want this back. And so if Vel didn't deliver that and deliver that message that Cassian, you know, did his job, took his cut, gave the Sky Crystal, you know, he did what he said he was going to do, then if Vel didn't deliver that, that's a problem.
I'm wondering if Vel was thinking that maybe Kleya is operating on her own and saying, where is he?
Yeah.
Where is Luthen? Because I have something to give to him and I need to talk to him.
Oh, that's a good point. Good point. And she didn't want to give him the Sky Crystal. Okay, so that's some good headcanon.
Well, you know what? I will say this show has done a good job of solving the mysteries it presents in a way that other shows that don't rhyme with Schmings of Schmauer have not always done. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So let's jump to the next scene. Marva wakes up to an intruder who turns out to be Cassian. Marva tells Cassian that Ferrix is now under Imperial authority and that Tim Carlo turned him in. Cassian tells Marva that they can leave and he's got enough credits. Marva seems like she's like placating him a little bit.
Oh, yeah, sure. We'll leave in the morning. All right.
Yeah, no problem. What do you think of I thought Cassian was so childlike in this scene. He was like, look, Mom, like, I solved our problems. Let's go. We can go. And, you know, which is a very contrast, a very interesting change for a character who has no problem pulling the trigger on somebody who is a, you know, potential threat to him.
I absolutely loved the combination of this scene and the following scene with Marva.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that it really adds a dimension to Cassian, like you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that Cassian has clung to Marva his entire life and sees her as home.
Uh-huh.
More than any planet, more than any location or people, Marva is mom and Marva is home.
Yeah.
And the idea that Marva is now trapped in a military state but understands that that's everywhere now and Cassian just doesn't get it because he's been causing the military state.
Yeah. And he's a man on the run, right? He's not looking for... Yeah.
It's really, really great writing.
What do you think of B2EMO, otherwise known as B?
He's fun. He's fun. The droids are always fun. This one's no different.
Has he wormed his way into your heart?
I wouldn't go that far. He's a little wide to worm his way into my heart.
Okay, then let's see. We've got Mon Mothma hosts a dinner party, and she meets with Tay Kolma. The two try to sense where each other's political allegiances are. Mon Mothma reveals that she has learned from Palpatine and that she's showing the world a different version of her. She wants him to be the chairman of a charity front for an undisclosed real cause. Perrin, her husband, is clueless. Or is he?
This was the best scene in the episode.
You think so?
I think. That's what I would say. How about you?
I'm down for the Marva Cassian conversation coming up, but this was a tight second.
I absolutely love the smile, you know, just her so conscious of appearances. Yeah. And so, you know, look at the stone in my hand and not the knife going into your neck. Oh my God, was that a good line? Because she was describing exactly what she was doing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, and the fact that he says, you know, you wouldn't like how, I forgot how he phrased it, but basically how far my politics have swung.
Yeah, my politics are a bit strong for your taste or something, right, something along those lines. Yeah.
Yes, perfect. And then she sort of smirks. There's just the slightest smile. Mon Mothma, the actress, is just killing it. And she has the slightest smirk, and then she knows that she can be open with him. But yet, she chooses to still be a little bit cautious. She basically gives him a little nudge that, yes, this is for some kind of anti-imperial activity. But she doesn't give him all the incriminating evidence.
I really appreciated how they staged this scene too, because it's a very close mirror to how Luthien played her, as I mentioned when we were talking about that scene.
You're back in Tolkien world, man. You're going Luthien again.
Oh, did I say Luthien again? Okay.
It's all right.
Galadriel. When Luthien, you know, used the, you know, smile, you know, and she did the same thing to Tay, and there was a question, you know, it was like, when she was talking to Luthien earlier, there was a question, does she have the spine for this? And then we see this scene with Tay, and her spine is made of titanium. She is on it. She is a woman with a mission. And this guy, she's marked this guy as a integral part of her plans.
You know, I loved also that Tay, you know, if we talk about Cassian being business leal, I think that Tay is business charming. You know, he's he says, well, I'm a banker. I'm not very original. That was a very charming line. I really liked Tay.
Yeah. And rebellions are expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and you need a good banker. And I think she's playing it level. And the whole construct that she has, that she's a nuisance to the Empire. And that she's protecting, you know, do-gooders and doing all this sort of quasi-charitable work. A really great setup for, like, you know, when you tell a lie, you want a lie to be as close to the truth as possible, right? Or at least that's what they say. That's what I've heard. so she's doing stuff. And she's doing stuff that's, you know, for some people might be very important. And it's a great cover. And especially when it comes to money, being able to move money to use a charitable organization to do that, I think is a really clever play.
Well, this is another fascinating part of this, is that it is her money that she's just been unable to access.
Right.
Because it's not, because I at first was thinking, oh, he's a banker. She's going to ask him to basically find money somewhere and get it to her. No. She's just saying, I'm being monitored so closely that I need you to help me launder this stuff. Launder it for a good cause, which is kind of funny. This is the opposite of Walter White.
Do you think, there were a couple times when I was watching Tay's facial reactions, and a couple times it seemed like he was excited by the prospect.
Yes.
And then there are other times where he was like a little unsure. And then at the end of the scene, I was left a little unsure about Tay as well. Can we really trust him?
I think so. I think when he was looking unsure, and I should do a rewatch of this, but I think when he was looking unsure, it was when he was still trying to feel out her politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as soon as she said, my politics are a little strong for your taste, his line back to him, all of a sudden, his whole body language relaxed.
Yeah.
So I think that he is on the rebel side. Either that or he's like, oh, now I got the dirt on you. I can go to the Emperor.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I was wondering. Is like, you know, is he plugged into other things that we don't know about? And is he part of how wide is the Emperor's net? What did she say? The vizier, the grand vizier, has infiltrated my meetings or something. I thought that was an interesting line. It was a little bit of a throwaway.
Yeah.
But I think it points to something else.
Well, he's either 100% good or 100% bad. So we can rest on that.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, and again, another one of those open questions, which as so far, seven episodes in, as you pointed out, they're not playing mystery box with us. If there is a mystery, we're getting some resolutions to them. So,
thank you. Thank you so much, showrunners.
Exactly.
Because you know what? I, for one, I'm just going to say it. I'm tired of mystery box shows. I've had enough of them. Stop doing it. We saw Lost. We all saw Lost. We don't need it anymore. Lost did it for like 60 years were the mystery boxes. Move on.
I think even Twin Peaks was the, was that an OG mystery box show?
Well, and then you got Westworld.
Fortunately, we don't have that problem with this show.
All right. So next we have Cassian again, and he's visiting Bix, who has a head wound and is troubled by the new imperial state of Ferrix. She tells him to get as far away from there as he can. Cassian asks about Luthen, but Bix doesn't know anything about him. Cassian leaves credits to cover his debts, and then he overhears stormtroopers and has a flashback to his adoptive father, Clem, being executed by imperial forces. What'd you feel about Clem?
I thought that it was a very poignant moment, and I thought that the flashback, which sometimes can be a real cheap device in television shows, I thought it was employed very, very well in this scene. And I would guess that maybe if I got it a third watch, where Cassian was hiding when he was sort of ducking away from the stormtroopers was the exact same place where that general area was the same place where his adoptive father Clem was I guess murdered by the Imperium. The sound of the stormtroopers' footsteps as modern day Cassian is hiding, probably the smells, the sights, like it brought back a real strong memory for him. And rather than giving us a cheap, oh, this is exposition in the form of flashback, they gave us character motivations. And as you said, seeing into Cassian's head a little bit more in a really well set up scene.
I agree with you that the flashback was great. I think that it was extra good because they tied it into the next scene. I think without that follow-up, it would have been a very confusing flashback. So I'm glad that then he goes on to discuss Clem briefly with Marva.
Did you, this is a little, I don't know what if this is a member, Barry, or just good historical accuracy, the showrunners doing their jobs, that the marching stormtroopers in the flashback scene, their helmets were of the, and somebody can write in and let us know which era that might have been by the style of the helmets, but the style of the helmets on the stormtroopers was the older Republic style.
Yeah, that looked like Clone War style.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was really, really nice touch detail there.
No, listen, I forgot to mention it on the first episode, but I was the perfect age to watch the Clone Wars animated series when I was a kid.
Ah,
and okay. I did. I have no memory of it at all, but I remember watching it every single week when it came out. I've recently started Rebels because I want to bone up on my Star Wars lore a little more. If we're going to keep talking about this. Very good show so far, animated, a little different vibe than this show, but I've heard that there's going to be some overlap, so this is very exciting.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Now, we don't see Clem's death actually happen, but then we have sort of a flashback crossover scene here later with Marva talking about Clem being strung up, and then we see some swinging feet as a young boy goes to charge a group of stormtroopers. And I thought that that was an interesting thing because the initial flashback moment had ended, and yet this was a continuation of that flashback in another upcoming scene. And they're definitely connected and move us forward in a way. And we really, I think, feel Marva's pain there when we see Clem's feet in the frozen ice sort of hanging there. It was really effective. It really affected me, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, the storytelling was incredible there. I have one detail that I was just totally unclear about, which is It seemed like the stormtroopers were going firing squad on Clem.
Yeah.
And then Marva's like, no, he was hung, or he was hanged, but she didn't say that. She said it was strung up, so... what I'm piecing together here is that he was shot by firing squad and then they left him up to send a signal. Do you think that's right?
That's roughly my headcanon. Whether exactly how his death happened, they definitely strung him up as a warning to other people.
I think that the main point is that it was done in an extremely cruel way and a way to send a message to the people of Ferrix.
Absolutely. What did you make of jumping back over to the conversation with Bix? I loved the comment that Cassian makes about Bix's father catching him climbing over that same wall. So they go back.
Yeah. That they're longtime friends, lovers, etc.
Yeah. Obviously, they dated at some point, and that's where Tim's jealousy came from, probably.
Yes. That was a good explanation.
Yeah.
Because I was a little confused. I was like, you know, first of all, snitches get stitches. But also, you know, this seems like you know that your girlfriend is in on something a little fishy. And you're going to bring the cops into it? That's kind of crazy if you don't have a good motivation. So this was a great sort of tying the bow on the package for me.
Yeah. Tim's jealousy really got the best of him here. And I remember there was a scene in, I forget, one of the early episodes where Tim is like, well, she's upset. And it seems like every time you come around, that she gets upset. And he's like, well, you got to find a less complicated woman or something to that effect. I can't remember exactly. And Cassian was playing it off like, hey, buddy, it's, you know, hey, we're buddies. And he even says, hey, good to see you, Tim. And Tim is just not having it. The green monster has him. He's fully thralled to the jealousy monster. Another thing that I thought was really interesting is when Cassian pays back his debts.
Yes.
It shows us that, and it was it's the same thing when he's trying to get a message back to Luthen, that he's a man with a code. And he does what he says that he's going to do. Even if, you know, as a sort of a scam artist, long conny type guy, whatever, he is still, it's important to him that he is a man of his word.
Well, he always finishes a job, I think. You know, he takes a job and he takes it to its end and then he moves on, hopefully. And I don't think he's going to move on so well from the rebellion, but I guess that's his plan.
So the next scene here is my favorite scene out of this episode. Marva tells Cassian she isn't going with him. She says that Ferrix has been hiding long enough and it's time for a rebellion. She was inspired by the attack on Aldani, and she tells him to take his money, find peace. She tells him she loves him and to stop searching for a sister, and it's time for him to let that go. She picks up a rifle as he leaves the apartment.
The rifle was just the perfect cherry on top of that scene.
Yeah.
It's just Marva is taking a side. Marva, I loved her line, I'm done waiting here to die.
Mm. She just has no F's left to give.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love that she was inspired by Cassian and doesn't even know it.
He must be, he was just participating in a riot. He was just trying to get paid. And yet, here it is, that job has backfired because he was going to take her away from this place. And it's just gotta gut him.
But you can also see his kindness in the fact that he does not shatter that image for her. He could say, no, I was a mercenary for that. I did it because they paid me. Uh-huh. It wasn't some dream. Well, it was for Nemec, but it wasn't for him. And he chooses to leave that in his head and let her believe what she wants to believe. And I think that shows us that side, that softer side of Cassian.
I really love Marva's acceptance of him as well. You know, I don't want to get all emotional here, but like on the emotional resonance meter, I was like a 6.5, 7. My eyes were wet. I did not have tears falling down my face, but I had definite weepies going on. You know, the way that she expresses to him that she's never loved anything more in the way that she loved him, and that you can't stay and I can't go. I mean, what amazing dramatic tension, you know, talking back before about like what is good TV and what is bad TV. Here are two characters who are being moved by who they are as their character, and that natural conflict that arises from that is just so powerful in this moment where she's like, this is an intractable choice. You cannot be here and I cannot leave. And that's just the way it's got to be.
And I like that she didn't go Uncle Ben on him. Mm-hmm. She didn't say with great power comes great responsibility. She said, you have been through pain.
Yeah.
And you deserve a happy ending.
Yeah. So take that money and go.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect, perfect scene.
I loved some of the point of view shots, too, of B. They gave us some different angles and sort of there was even one framed shot where Marva goes over to water some of the hanging plants and Cassian's across the room from her and B's perfectly framed in the middle. And he's sort of this pseudo child and he's watching this argument among the adults. And he's like, and then like she says something about like, well, you know, sort of, she makes a comment about a sort of a fatalistic comment, and they cut to B really quick, and he kind of goes and like, you know, dips his eye a little bit, and they're using B, I think, really effectively to add an extra emotional element to this whole show.
Yeah, no, the droids are good. Droids are good in Star Wars. They've always been used pretty well, and B's no exception.
All right, where are we going next?
Well, we've got to go back to the baddies. So we have Partagaz receiving some reports from the ISB leadership team. Blevin accuses Dedra of violating protocol. He's lodging a public complaint. He's saying, J'accuse. He accuses her of violating these protocols. So she reveals that she pushed boundaries. She uncovered a coordinated rebel effort to distribute equipment. And Partagaz reassigns Blevin's sector containing Ferrix to Dedra. What did you think about this whole dueling accusations?
This, now that you are, we start talking about the scene, I almost have to step back. We have three big scenes in this, three monumental or pivotable. I can't say it. Dang it.
Pivotal.
Thank you.
It's okay. We got there.
Pivotal scenes in this episode. I think we have Mon Mothma's dinner party. We have the conversation between Cassian and Marva. And then we have this scene with the ISB. And while I'd say the conversation with Marva was, you know, really pulled at me emotionally, the Mon Mothma scene was just beautiful, and it was elegant in its, it was just sort of a rock wrapped in silk kind of thing, you know, like they're plotting some serious stuff among this, in this gorgeous, you know, cocktail party. But this scene with Deirdre and the ISB, damn, that was so well executed. Deirdre stood her ground. She was not having it. And what would it do? Would you like your credibility ventilated in public? It's just like, damn, that was so good. Such good writing.
I will say, though, that actor was really good at looking like she just shat her pants while she's doing it, which I think was the right performance.
Yes.
I would not have bought it if she was just calm, cool, and collected the entire time she was doing this. She was sweating. She thought that Partagaz was going to tear her a new one. Until he didn't.
Right. And I think he, I think with that comment about being ventilated in public, it's very in character for Partagaz to say, you know, to use something like that. But I don't wonder if that turn of phrase allowed her a little bit of latitude to riposte and bring out sort of bring out her guns and say, okay, well, he seems very fixated on this, so I'd love to see what his evidence is.
Right, and I do love that at the end, Partagaz pulls her aside and says, "Well done, but watch your back."
Yeah, well, that's the master. Partagaz says to her, "Thesis, please," and she's got to deliver. And then when he says, "Oh, I forget the line," but it basically like, "Oh yeah, you did a good job," and she's like, "What? Blink, blink." She was really taken aback.
All right, so let's move back to Cassian, who's going by Keefe now. And he is pretending to shower while grabbing some credits from his pistol case. A woman's talking to him from a bed while he's doing that. Then he takes a walk along the beach, spotting Imperial drones already, so seeing the surveillance state. He's interrogated by a shore trooper. Love the name.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is choked out by a droid, ends up at trial for a number of charges, and gets sentenced to 6 years imprisonment under the new guidelines.
Calm down, sir. You need to step back, sir.
Yeah.
Why are you running, sir? I'm not running. You know, you better not be. Like it was the perfect trap that heavy-handed enforcement uses to just roust people for no reason. It was so well played out and just shocking in its brutality and banality.
We own this planet.
The music, the way that they use the music to amp up the tension of the scene, just as, you know, as those people are running by and the droids are flying over, and then when he gets rousted by the shore trooper, again, just, and the tonal shift, like, I mean, going from all of the previous scenes to this, like, they were showing the flamingos flying. I was like, what is going on here? This is a weird thing. And then, oh, Cassian's trying to live his best life.
Right. He actually listened to Marva, but Marva mm-hmm. was also extremely right that this is everywhere now and you can't run from it anymore.
The comedy again, too, with the Imperial security droid, like holding him up there. Like,
yeah. Hang?
Hang? And to be choked out by a metal droid hand, like that has got to be terrifying and painful. And yet, it was kind of this comical, funny scene.
Yeah, it was, again, the comedy in the show is just the right tone.
So, 6 years.
He's not staying there for 6 years. He literally can't with the Rogue One plotline, I'm pretty sure.
No, and I think that'll be a nice sort of homage to Rogue One, too, about, maybe we're going to get a prison break. Maybe that'll be one of our next little mini arcs. That would be cool.
Yeah.
So then we end with Karn sitting in his cubicle. And again, I just had Severance feels for that whole thing.
Yeah, it's definitely big Severance vibes. It's very depressing. I cannot see Karn sitting there the rest of the season. Otherwise, I have no idea why they included him as a character.
Yeah, oh no, they've got plans for him. Of that I'm certain.
Yeah.
And I really visually, you know, they gave us the conversation about Karn's collar, and then they cut to Deirdre's collar. So I'm calling that. I'm putting some internet chips on the table there, and putting a bet down that they are going to get connected up at some point in this storyline.
He's just not as competent as her.
No, and I think that's a great contrast, right? Because she's very competent. He's got the instinct to be that. He's got that kind of fire. He's got that kind of drive, but he's hamstrung by his upbringing and the voice of his mother in the back of his head, frankly.
Yeah, no, I think that he is hamstrung by his upbringing, but also everybody has trauma, and I'm sure that Dedra, as a recent person from enforcement, is no stranger to a lot of the same pressures that Karn has had.
Yeah.
But Dedra learned the right lessons from them, which is if you're going to do something, you have to make sure that all your paperwork is done, and you have to make sure that you do it right. And that if you're going to break protocol, you are doing it in a way that is defensible. Whereas Karn says, someone made me mad and I'm going to go fight them.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good point. He was given specific orders, too, to avoid it, where Dedra was also given some instructions, but she did it in a way that, like you said, is defensible. She had the receipts. She could show receipts when she got called.
Well, and she didn't fly to Ferrix and try to hunt people down. She did paperwork first. She actually did an investigation.
Exactly. That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that you see two different approaches to challenging leadership. And it's funny because I'm just thinking as I'm watching the episode, I want to root for Dedra, even though she's on the bad guy side. Like, I want to root for her as a character, which is something that I have not seen done with the Imperial characters in Star Wars before. Now, I don't want her to kill all my friends, but I do want to see her, like, succeed. I would love to see her go to the light side.
I think this is a really interesting thing that you're saying here. Yeah, I'm trying to process while you're saying that. Like, I hadn't thought about the fact that I'm rooting for an Imperial officer.
Right.
Like, why is that?
Have we ever done this in the history of Star Wars?
Can't they've all been sort of, you know, faceless jackbooted thugs who, you know, who serve sort of some short-term purpose, you know, mooks or you know, big one-dimensional bad guys. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I'm going to pay attention to that a little bit more. And this duality that they're giving us between Karn and Dedra, and where we're not rooting for Karn, and he's clearly a bumblefuck, where right. Dedra is like, she's sharp, and we want to see her sharpness rewarded, but do we really?
Listen, Karn is about to pop a blood vessel in his cubicle, just sitting there. And Dedra needs to take stimmies just to be able to stay awake. Her blood pressure is like 90 over 30. She is stone cold.
She's stone cold. That is sure. Did you, let me ask you this, when the episode ended, were you expecting that? Were you ready for the episode to end?
No, I thought for sure that something was going to happen in Karn. I thought he was going to stand up and say, look at us here. We're in misery and we have to go fight the Empire's war. And no, that didn't happen.
No, not at all. I was floored. I was like, wait a minute. How long? I think it was like, I think the episode is 53 minutes with credits. I was like, wait, what happened? Like, I was just getting into this storyline and it's over. What are you telling me that it's over? So again, really masterful job at the producers of this show are doing their job. And that is, I'm fully in the secondary world with these characters and oblivious to the primary world. What time is it? And you know, what's going on?
All right, David. So it seems like we've gotten to the end of this episode.
I have a couple of things I want to, not episode notes, just open questions. I'm keeping a little log, a little journal here of things.
Okay.
Where is the sky crystal? That's something I want to know. I want to know what Cinta is up to. I'm curious about Mon Mothma's daughter. Why was she wanting to be excused? It seemed like she was having some emotional distress, something going on. I mean, it could be just normal teenager stuff. But I'm curious as to what's going on with her. Kasa's sister, or Cassian's sister. And then the question about Tay. Is he reliable or not? All right, so those are my open questions. I'm going to be tracking these as we go through. So, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so glad to be following the show week to week. It has me captivated, and I can't wait for next Wednesday.
So, question about production here. We're going to be back with folks on our next podcast after episode 10. So we're going to go 8, 9, and 10, which is 3 weeks away. So our next podcast should be out around November 11th, 12th, sometime around then.
Yeah, we'll see how this goes.
Might get the bug.
We'll definitely have that one. I'm saying we might add more. That's my hint.
Got it. Okay, so under promise, over deliver. Is that the methodology here?
Yeah, that's what I like to do.
We'll definitely promise something after 10, and if we've got more, we'll come at you. Otherwise, John, super cool that we're both enjoying the show and grooving on it, and I can't wait till next Wednesday.
Yeah, same here.
All right. Remember, send in your feedback to andor@thelorehounds.com, and we'll see you the next time. The Andor podcast is produced by the Lorehounds and published by Bald Move. You can send questions and feedback about this podcast to andor@thelorehounds.com. For all Lorehounds content, subscribe to our Firehose feed, The Lorehounds, on your podcast app of choice. To get ad-free versions of this and all other Lorehounds podcasts, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Thanks for listening.